And with that, gentlemen, let's now transfer to the second part of our shiur, the third shiur on the life and philosophy of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. I told you many, many times that I believe that I was very attracted to Rav Yaakov simply because I believe that there were many similarities between him and my own Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Amital. And one of them I want to speak about this morning, and that is the question of having balance in halachic behavior, or having a broad perspective in halachic behavior. Namely, what I mean is the following. I probably told you this story before. If I did, just shake your head. I was on a plane, we're about to land, and the gentleman next to me was the envy of me, his fellow passenger, because he slept the entire flight. But an hour before the flight lands, when we're already in our seat and you can't get up, etc., he gets up. He gets up, he can care less that there's a seatbelt sign, he washes his hands, he says the morning brachot, and then he gets up to daven. Stewardess after stewardess after stewardess said, we're landing, sit down, you have to... Nothing, he doesn't move. When he finally sits down, I look at him, and I do like this. And he says to me, what do you mean? The Shulchan Aruch paskins, based on the Gemara, that if you're standing in Shmoneh Esrei, even if a snake is on your heel, you're not supposed to move. So, stewardess after stewardess came up to me, said, we're landing. I didn't move. I looked at him and I said, but doesn't that same Shulchan Aruch say that you can daven sitting down when you're on the way? If you're traveling on a donkey, if you're in a carriage, you don't have to stop and stand up for Shmoneh Esrei, you can daven sitting down. He says to me, there's no such thing. So, we all know that the Talmud says, Ashrei mi shebalakan v'talmudo biyado. Blessed is who comes here to the world to come, and he remembers all his learning. So, blessed is who comes and his learning is in his hand. I take out my phone, I open up to the Shulchan Aruch, I have the whole Mishnah Berurah on my phone, open up to the right siman, and I show it to him. He takes a look, and he says, I don't look at smartphones. Now I'll add the postscript. I was about to tell him, that's why you're an idiot, because you don't look at smartphones. Because if you would have looked at smartphones, you would have known the halacha, and you just violated the halacha, you did a chilul Hashem, you made a fool of yourself, etc., etc., etc. But part of this story was telling because he didn't have a broad perspective on halacha. His perspective was very pedantic. Namely, oh, I know one halacha. The halacha is that you can't move during Shmoneh Esrei even if a snake is on your heel. You know what that's like? It's like if you have, Bruce, the following at home. You have 12 kids like Yaakov Avinu. Why is it that Yaakov Avinu was the one that ordained Ma'ariv? For a very simple reason. He didn't want to give a bath to 12 kids. So as soon as his wife said, I need your help, he says, I gotta go daven Ma'ariv. Gotta go daven. Minyan, it's nothing more important than Minyan. Bye-bye, going to Minyan. Quite frankly, Minyan is important, davening is important, but there are other halachos in the same Shulchan Aruch, and you have to have a broad perspective to understand how to balance it all. You can't just quote one halacha and disregard the rest. You can't say, oh, Minyan's important, but Hilchot Lashon Hara is not. Yes, Bruce. It wasn't on a smachta, Bruce. It was a direct quote. It was a direct quote, but he quoted chapter 1, not chapter 2.
But he's quoting it not as his source. He's quoting it for some reason he has in his mind. It's the halacha. And when you ask him why, he makes this reference because he remembers it from Yeshiva, but that's not really his reason.
I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. I'm going to melamed alav zchut. He believes that the halacha is, as quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that when you stand Shmoneh Esrei, you're not supposed to move. That is the halacha. But there's another halacha in the next chapter, and that is you shouldn't stand for Shmoneh Esrei if you're traveling. That halacha, he didn't know, he forgot, and when pointed out to him, he said, I have no idea. You understand? So I'm not so sure it's asmachta. Okay? Anyway, continuing on here, gentlemen, what I believe is rather important is to have that broad perspective, and I believe that Reb Yaakov had it, because we many, many a times have a very pedantic perspective. You know, we have to go to Minyan, we have to daven, we can care less about what's happening around us and what's happening within us, because we have one halacha. We have to go to Minyan, we have to do this, we have to do that. Like, nothing can go ahead and change our schedule. And I believe that there's many examples in this in the life of Rav Yaakov, but allow me indeed to quote two sources. One that's alleged to the Rebbe of Rav Yaakov, one of his Rebbeim, and one is to my own Rebbe. My own Rebbe, Rav Amital, said in the name of his grandmother. His grandmother was a very pious person. She used to get up in the morning and say Tehillim. She used to go ahead and polish his shoes, because she said that a yeshiva boy should not go to yeshiva, to cheder, with unpolished shoes. And every time he tried to stop her, it didn't help. But she had a very good term in terms of balance. And that was the word frum. Have you heard the term frum? You know, is he frum? What do we mean by saying frum? Define to me frum. You know, convert came to Judaism, doesn't know anything. You're teaching them the terms. So you're going to teach them who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. You're going to talk them as modern Orthodox. There's ultra-Orthodox, there's light-Orthodox, heavy-Orthodox. Frum, define the term. Go. Who wants to take a shot at this one? What does frum mean? Yes, Arthur.
Pious.
Pious. Okay. Anyone else? Define the term frum. We heard pious. Rabbi Lewis says Brooklyn. Okay. What are you basically all saying, if I understand you correctly? You're basically all saying that what does frum mean? Frum means that we are very pious in what realm? In the realm of mitzvot between us and God. We keep Shabbos very, very carefully. Right? We don't eat from every kashrus. We take upon ourselves extra chumras in the realm of our laws between us and God. But Norman, have you ever heard? You know, you're a very frum person because you pay your workers on time. You're a very frum person because you're honest. You're a very frum person because you don't go ahead and take advantage of people. You're a very frum person because you're honest. That I haven't heard. So, pardon? Exactly. Non-religious people would say about religious people, oh, they're very this, they're very that. But religious people wouldn't consider being honest as frum. As a matter of fact, I would even say that if you say you're into not going ahead and exploiting workers, paying them on time, being honest, then you're one of those leftists that reads the Haaretz newspaper and thinks it's the truth, and you're probably vegan / you're a vegetarian, and you probably recycle everything you breathe, right? We're talking about that kind of a strange person. He probably lives in a desert somewhere and milks the goats to have his cheese. Am I correct now? Well, unfortunately or fortunately, that's not the Torah. The Torah who says to keep Shabbos is the same Torah that says, Lo tashok sachar sachir ve'evyon. The same Torah that says keep kashrus. It's the same Torah that says to pay your workers on time. And to be honest and to be straight. Well, very nice. I'm from. So my Rebbe's, what?
From an
Eilach. Ah, very nice. We'll get to that in a moment. So, my, excuse me a second. My Rebbe's grandmother said, you know what frum stands for in Yiddish? Frum stands for feel rishus veinig mitzvahs. A lot of rishus, of evil, and a little of mitzvah. That's frum. One of the Rebbeim of Rav Yaakov said approximately the same thing. It's alleged, I know Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said this, but One of the Rebbeim of Rav Yaakov was a time that he spent in the Talmud Torah in Kelm. The Talmud Torah in Kelm was one of the Musar Yeshivas, and they were very big on honesty. They were so big on honesty that someone left a coin by the windowsill once every Friday. Whoever cleaned the Beis Medrash picked up the coin, cleaned under it, and put it back down. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky was learning there Shavuos night. After a long night of learning all night, he took his big Lithuanian kippah off. You know what they look like. They look like cones. He took it off, put it into the Gemara, forgot about it. Years later, he came back for a visit. It was in the Gemara in the same place he was learning. That was Kelm. Very honest. So in Kelm, they used to say what Arthur said earlier. And that is, we can care less about the word frum. We are Ehrlich. Ehrlich in Yiddish means... What does Ehrlich mean? Honest to God and honest to people. Equal. I'm honest with God. I don't violate Shabbos. I'm honest with people. I pay on time. Or, because it was Lithuania and they had to be cynical because that is the Lithuanian way, they said frum is a galach. A galach is frum. A galach is a reverend. A galach is a minister. He's frum. A Jew is Ehrlich. Okay? Once I heard that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik offered a shidduch to someone. They kept on asking, is he frum? Is he frum? And he kept on saying, frum is for a galach. He's Ehrlich. So, based on that broad perspective, mitzvot between us and God, mitzvot between us and fellow man, let's go through a few examples of Rav Yaakov's life to see how this played out. Number one. And this is a story that I have to say, if you want to take anything I ever say about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and paste it on your refrigerator, this is the one. Now, I know today refrigerators are not what they used to be. Once upon a time, the whole reason you had a refrigerator was to paste things on. Bar mitzvah invitations and wedding invitations, every stupid little thing that the kid drew in school, that's what it was for. It was also to store food. Today, many of the refrigerators you can't paste on anymore, so I don't know why you need a refrigerator. My wife tells me to store food, but I don't know. It didn't make sense to me. To make a long story short, if you want to take something and paste it on your, let's be more modern, on your screensaver, if you want to put it on your WhatsApp status, then this is the story. This is a broad perspective. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is walking in Muncie. Now, you have to understand, when I walk down the street, no one says boo. When a very important rabbi like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is walking in Muncie, and he's like the chief rabbi, unofficial, of Muncie, people notice. So there was a student that noticed Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is walking, and he has in his hand something that they used to have. Do you remember an envelope? Does everyone remember an envelope you used to have to mail? Not e-mail, actually mail. Everyone remember somewhere? Okay, so picture it. When the dinosaurs used to crawl on the face of the earth and Grunstein used to have hair over here, we used to mail letters. So he went and he was about to mail a letter. So the student said, ooh, he has in his hand an envelope. He has in his hand an envelope. He's going to mail the letter. I'm going to take it for him and not have to trouble him. He can go back home and learn Torah. So he runs to Reb Yaakov and says, Rebbe, I'll mail the letter for you. And Rav Yaakov said, thank you so much. He always had a big smile, but no, thank you. I'll do it myself. So instead of the student saying, no, I'll do it. And he'd say, no, thank you. Do it myself. He said, why? I can do it for you. He said, why? Mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. Does everyone know what that means? Have you learned Masechet Kiddushin in your life? In Masechet Kiddushin, the beginning of the second chapter, Daf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph, it says you can mekadesh a woman by virtue of a shaliach. Namely, you can don't have to show up for your wedding. Maybe the photographers won't like it. I'm sure your wife won't like it. But once upon a moon, what we call a wedding wasn't a wedding. Kiddushin happened a year before. So just to give a girl a ring, you can get a proxy to do it on your behalf. Like many mitzvot. For example, how many of you ate fruits and vegetables this morning? How many? No one. You're all unhealthy eaters. Okay. So, if you ate fruits and vegetables, you know you have to take trumos and masros. How many of us do it ourselves unless we have a garden? So we give a proxy It could be to Tnuva Company under the leadership of Rabbi Vitman Shlita, the rabbi of Alon Shvut, or we can give it to some other guy. They take it on our behalf, and we eat the fruits and vegetables. So you can give a woman a ring by virtue of a shaliach. She can accept it by virtue of a shaliach. However, the Gemara points out, mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. It's better to do the mitzvah on your own than by virtue of a shaliach. And then it gives examples of rabbis that used to cut the chicken on their own for Shabbos, or cut the fish on their own for Shabbos, etc. Do the mitzvah on your own if you can. Incidentally, in parentheses, as we're getting closer to Sukkos, we all know there's a mitzvah to live in the sukkah, but the Netziv from Volozhin, in his parish on the She'iltos, suggests that since it says in the Torah that you have to make a sukkah, he believes that even building the sukkah is a mitzvah, because the Yerushalmis and the Bavli say you make a bracha on making a sukkah. We don't paskin like the Yerushalmi that says to make bracha X, we paskin like the Bavli, Shechiyonu, and we make it on the night of Sukkot also for the sukkah. But to make a long story short, there's a mitzvah to make the sukkah, and the Netziv says, mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho, you should put on the schach, you should do it on your own. Yes, Norman. That's right. That's a mitzvah shebegufo. Absolutely. Put on tefillin for you, etc. So gentlemen, to make a long story short, there are mitzvot you can do by proxy. But Rabbi Yaakov said, mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho. So the student said, well, what mitzvah are you doing? What mitzvah are you doing right now? You're doing a mitzvah of what? You're doing a mitzvah of sending tzedakah? He said, no, I'm paying my electric bill. You're paying your utility bill? What mitzvah is that? Anyone want to guess what mitzvah it is to pay your utility bill? It's called priat shtar chov. You have a chov, you have a debt, and now you're going to pay for it. So he's doing a mitzvah. Why should he give it to someone else? He's going to do it. So he wrote the check, he went to the mailbox, and he mailed the check. Does that not show you what a broad perspective he had? It's not just in the realm of shaking a lulav and wearing tefillin and keeping Shabbos and Kashrus and Taharata Mishpacha and making brachos before and after. It's also in the realm of, I'm going to pay my electric bill. I'm going to do it on my own. That's a mitzvah too. Why is it only a mitzvah to do that part of the Torah? It's also a mitzvah to pay on time. Next story. At a certain point in the 20th century, many of you lived through it. I didn't. Certain Jews out of a certain European community that will remain nameless were smuggling diamonds into the United States, I believe. And they were smuggling it in the one thing that customs usually don't check. What's the one thing that customs usually don't check? Tefillin. They put it in their tefillin zekel. They put it into their tefillin bag. And they figured that they won't check in there. And they were caught. And of course, when they're caught, there are certain very religious Jews that say, let's ransom them out of jail, because a Jew cannot be in jail. A shavui in Judaism is a very, 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 very terrible thing. You can kill someone, but shavui, they can really torture. And anyone that went through the Yom Kippur War, who's still alive and went to Shevi, went into captivity, can tell you terrible stories about what they went through. They didn't get over it till today. So they figured, an American jail is like Chevy, which in and of itself is an assumption that I think is stupid, but let's assume for the moment that that assumption is correct. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said, absolutely do not ransom them. Why? Because if you ransom these Jews out of jail, this is what's going to happen. They're going to say that religious Jews, as a matter of fact, smuggle in things you're not allowed to smuggle in their tefillin. So what is that going to say about religious Jews? And what's going to say that's going to say about tefillin? Now, we love Jews. We don't want them to suffer. But if the price is going to be that that's what they're going to say about Jews, then forget it. We're not ransoming them out of prison. And he absolutely refused to give his haskama, his aberration to it, because he said, no, this is what they're going to say about Jews. I'm not part of it. Jews have to be honest. If Jews have this stigma on them, it's going to be bad for the Jewish people. Let them suffer for what they did. Yes, Bruce.
Wouldn't they say the same thing whether they're let out of jail or not? Let's just say a Jew smuggle in.
Yeah, but if the Jewish community say what they did was wrong, period, then that says these were a select few that don't do what the majority do. But if the majority, the Jewish community, comes out with a pronouncement and says, let's ransom these Jews, it's a mitzvah to ransom them, they're basically saying that contraband is kosher. And you have to go ahead and say, this is not for me. But he was exactly, I'm not talking about bail. He was against helping them publicly as a community because he wanted to make a statement. Community, Jewish community are honest people. And dishonest people let them suffer for their crimes. Allow me to not go to dishonesty. Let's go to another issue. One of the things that happened in the 70s a lot was kidnapping. Kidnapping of planes. Kidnapping was a very, very common thing in the 70s. It was terrible. There was this terrible story that three planes were kidnapped to Jordan. I believe the year was 1970. If I'm not mistaken, you can ask Dr. Daniel. Pardon? Hijack. Okay. Hijack. Kidnap. The bottom line is that they were hijacked to Jordan, three planes. They eventually blew up the planes. And at that time, on one of the planes was Rav Huttner. Have you heard of Rav Yitzchak Huttner? One of the Gedolim of the 20th century. So many of the Gedolim in Chutz La'aretz and in Israel said, okay, we have a lot of people in captivity right now, but let's get out Rav Huttner. Because the Gemara says that you're allowed to pay a lot of money to kick out a great rabbi. You shouldn't pay a shavoy yeter al demehen, which means if you overpay them, they're going to kidnap Jews every Monday and Thursday to make money. So you can't give in to their demands every Monday and Thursday. But a great rabbi, you know, you could. The Maharam Rutenberg, as you all know the story, refused to allow that dispensation for himself. But they said Rav Huttner now is in captivity. He's been hijacked. Let's get him out. Now, you understand there's a lot of Jews there. But let's get him out. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, absolutely not. Why? Because, he said, if you would have asked me, I would have said, because his blood is no more red than others. But the Gemara does say great rabbis are different. He said, no, that's not the reason. The reason is because the Arabs never forgave Israel for finding a state. So the war of independence continues. It just changes the way they fight. Once upon a time, they went ahead and they fought in one way. And today, they're fighting in a different way. So basically, nothing has changed. The war of independence goes on. And from this perspective, said Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, they're fighting against the Jews for independence in Israel. And now, their way of doing it is not in the battlefield, but it's by hijacking planes. So therefore, it's a war. In a war, every soldier is equal. Great rabbis are no different than the rest of the people, because the halacha is in a milchemet mitzvah. Even who? Anyone remember? Afilu kala michupata. Exactly, Rabbi Lewis. Even a bride from her chuppah, you take her out for a milchemet mitzvah. And therefore he said, this is a war. There are soldiers. No one is more important than the other. Again, broad perspective. More than that, let's go to a very easy story. How many of you walk down the streets in America, in Canada, in other places, and you happen to see a bunch of nuns? You see a mother superior. What do? So we Jews have a very natural allergy towards Christianity, and it's understandable, based on what was done to the Jewish people in the name of that religion through the years. And when we see a nun, we have an allergy. So in Muncie, a mother superior was walking down the street, and told a Jew, a frum Jew, you know, every time I walk down the street, the frum Jews go to the other side of the street. Or they don't go to the other side of the street, they just simply ignore me. Except for one old Jew. He used to always say good morning with a smile. What happened to him? And they said, oh, that was Rabbi Yaakov, he died. Broad perspective. You don't have to like Christianity, but be a mensch. Be a mensch. Do you know that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky got a knock on his door, and there was a bunch of kids there on a certain night in October, all dressed up in their costume, and they didn't say Afreilich in Purim. What did they say? They said, trick or treat. So the student who opened the door started to explain, listen, this is a Jewish home. We don't fulfill your customs. Rabbi Yaakov heard it, ran into the room, told him to be quiet, took out the candies he's already prepared for these kids, and gave him the candies. You don't have to sign on to Christianity to be a mensch. Kids, come to the door. Give them candies. They're not Jewish kids necessarily. No problem with brachos. And he went ahead and gave him those candies. Again, a broad perspective. A broad perspective. It was said about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that he used to stand up in the Haas for two people. For two people. Beyond rabbis. Two people. First of all, the chairman of the board of Torah Vadas. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. So he stood up for the chairman of the board of Yeshiva's Torah Vadas. Why did he stand up for him? Because that man pays his salary. And the second person is the interns in the hospital because he felt they were shluchei mitzvah. God puts upon in their mind to help patients. He stood up for interns in the hospital. Again, a broad perspective. When he saw a convert, he used to give a convert a hug. Why did he give a convert a hug? Because he said, I'm fulfilling two mitzvot. When I see a fellow Jew, there's a mitzvah, v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha. An important mitzvah, but one mitzvah. When I see a convert, I'm also fulfilling the mitzvah of v'ahavtem et ager. And therefore, because I'm fulfilling two mitzvot, I ultimately am going to give him a hug. Isn't that a broad perspective? Next, he once went ahead and had to be at a Din Torah, and a student drove him. So, because his student drove him to and escorted him, it was a train ride, he said to the people doing the Din Torah, that he needs an interpreter, so this student will come and be his interpreter for the Din Torah. Very nice, everything's fine. Then, at that point, he also said, I need an extra ticket. What do you need an extra ticket? For his wife. What do you mean for his wife? His wife doesn't need to come. Yes, she does. It's their first year of marriage, and according to one opinion, a husband should not leave town during their first year of marriage, so therefore I'm buying a ticket for his wife as well. And finally, and this is important, the fake frumkeit. You know what the fake frumkeit is? The fake frumkeit is the people that come up with new chumras that ultimately, I don't know, it's like, it wasn't done, so there must have been a reason why, and try to find out why. So even if your learning sort of points you in that direction, you should ask yourself, well, why wasn't it done until now? So, here is the situation. Someone came to Rabbi Yaakov's house and had to drive him somewhere. And he tried to stand up for him. You know, you stand up for a rabbi that comes into the room. It's Derech Eretz. It's a mitzvah of Bahadarta Pnei Zakein. But he's in the car. Now, how many of you have seen people stand up for great rabbis when you're in a car? You know, you're at a stoplight in Borough Park, and a great Rebbe comes out of his shtibel after davening, you know, davening for a Rebbe, finishes around 12 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, walks out, and he's walking, he's at the traffic light, you're stopped. Do you get out of your car and stand up for the Rebbe? Or not? So Rabbi Yaakov really didn't like these new chumras. He felt this was baloney. But he told the student, you're not mekayim anything. Why? He says, If you're in the car, you're going to bump your head. And you're going to bump your head because of me. I'm not going to feel any kavod from that. If you leave the car, then you're in a different rishus. If you're in a different rishus, then it makes no difference that you're standing up, because I'm not standing up for me. You're standing up for the air. And therefore, he says, there's no reason to stand up. As a matter of fact, he was once driving, and a student started to do lumdus with him, and push him in lumdus, and he was trying to tell him to focus on driving. And because of it, he went through a stop sign. All right, and a cop stopped him. And he said, I could have talked the cop out of giving him the ticket, but I decided not to do it. Because I wanted to teach my student a lesson that when he drives, he should stop being into lumdus and focus on driving. And that was not just a statement of good advice. There is a Gemara. The sages say that when Yosef told his brothers go home, he told them, Artir gezu badarech. Don't get mad at each other on the way. Pasha pshat is they're all going to blame each other for Yosef and what they did to him. And he told them, don't do that. But the Chachamim add an additional level of interpretation, and they say Artir gezu badarech means don't learn when you're driving, because God forbid you'll make an accident. How does this apply today? Listening to recordings? Yes, no, maybe a different story. But the bottom line is, Rabbi Yaakov said, I want to teach him a lesson. Leave the learning for the Beis Medrash, and when you drive, you should drive. You should focus on driving. And he decided not, I repeat, not to talk him out of a ticket. Just incidentally, since I'm talking about a car, allow me to bring one more story about Rav Aaron Kotler, which I'm sure you all heard of. Rav Aaron Kotler, the founder of Lakewood Yeshiva. Rav Aaron Kotler used to drive from Brooklyn to Lakewood. When you drive from Brooklyn to Lakewood, you go through something that we don't have in Israel, because in Israel we're a very sophisticated country. We have one toll road in Israel, Kvish Shesh, and they don't trust Israelis to pay the toll. So what do? They take a picture of your car and they send you a bill, right? But in America, as you all know, you can pay a toll at a toll booth. Now, in the olden days of times, there were two ways to pay a toll. You can either pay a toll by going up to the gentleman who sits there, give him the cash, he'll give you change, and you'll leave. There's another way to pay the toll. Which way is that? I'm not talking about Easy Pass. That's a new thing. I'm talking about before Easy Pass.
Throwing your quarters at the machine.
Ah, you remember those machines? I always felt, wow, these machines are smarter than us. They can feel the weight of the nickel and the dime and the quarter, and it goes in. Oh, the thing goes up. So if you want to get to Lakewood faster, you'd go to the basket. Rav Aaron Kotler said, no, go to the toll booth. The gentleman makes a living out of this. You have to give him cover. Why are you going to give cover to a machine? Give cover to the gentleman who's in the toll booth. Wish him a good morning. Now, when I drove from Boston to New York, this is exactly what I did. And it was very telling as to how nice people are closer to New York versus further from New York. Every toll booth, I stopped, I went dafka to the gentleman. I want to mekayim this story. And it was very interesting. I came from Canada at the time. There, everyone's ultra, ultra nice. And it's a very nice culture of good morning, how are you? So he went to the toll booth, I did that. And it was very interesting to know which toll booths had nicer people at those toll booths versus which not. Which said good morning back, where are you going, what a nice family. And which one just said 50 cents. And how close they were to a certain, we'll just say state. But we'll leave that for a different time. Cultural differences within America. Allow me to end with the following story. Rav Yaakov was sitting at a meal, and he was about to get up at the end of the meal to wash Mayim Achronim. Do you need to wash Mayim Achronim today? Big machlokas aposkim. In general, we have two opinions. One opinion is, no, you only need to wash Mayim Achronim if your hands are dirty. Like once upon a time, they used to have melach zdomit, which was very coarse salt, that if you put it in your eyes, you would have become blind. So today, we eat with a fork and a knife, and therefore our hands are not dirty. If your hands are dirty, you should wash them before you bench, but if not, you don't need to. That's the general opinion. But there is an opinion of the Ravid, based on Amar Chazal, that says, V'hit kadishtem v'hayitem kdoshim, you shall be holy and be holier, And the Gemara darshins, this is Mayim Rishonim, this is Mayim Achronim. Not mentioning your hands being dirty or anything of the sort. So if that's the reason, we still have to wash today. Because it has nothing to do with dirty hands. So Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky decided he's going to wash Mayim Achronim. My Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein, Zechrono Levracha, decided to take upon himself Mayim Achronim when he went to Harvard. He believed he needed to take upon himself a chumrah if he's going to a secular university. So he took upon himself this chumrah and he did it through his entire life. I saw it. And like the grah, from a cup, revius, the whole thing. Now, make a long story short, Rabbi Yaakov gets up to wash Mayim Achronim and his grandson says, no, I'll bring it to you. You know, they sell those Mayim Achronim thingamajings. He said, absolutely not. You're here to help me. You're my grandson, right? You have to help me for what I need. You don't have to help me for my chumras. You don't have to help me for my chumras. I have a chumrah, that's not your business. That's my problem. And I think that story sums up this entire shir regarding a broad perspective.
Why is it called a chumrah when the Gemara says it's Mayim Achronim Chova? Sort of a black and white statement.
Exactly, Bruce. Mayim Achronim Chova versus Mayim Rishonim Mitzvah means it's chova because it's dangerous not to wash Mayim Achronim. Which we know today it's not the case because it's not dangerous because we eat with a fork and knife and we don't have Melach Zdomit. So if it's a chova, namely, it has to do with health, then it doesn't apply today.
I didn't think we put historical context like that with all this.
That's not historical context. That's not historical context. No. Bruce, you're mixing up two things. There are mitzvot that our sages ordained. Some of them have an historical context, but the historical context have nothing to do with the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Or I'll put it into halachic terms, even though batel atam, lo batel ha-mitzvah. Right? Whatever the reason is, we continue it today, even though the reason's irrelevant, like second day yontiv, and many other such examples. However, there are mitzvot that are not mitzvot. The sages said to do it because it was dangerous. That's because of health. They told you the reason, and they said that's the only reason we're making this an obligation. Once the reason doesn't apply, namely there's no health hazard, then that doesn't apply either. For example, beyond Mayim Achronim, eating cheese with fish. They said it was a sakana. Okay? Incidentally, people today still keep the minhag of not eating fish and meat because of sakana. And as Rav Herschel Schechter has pointed out through COVID, he doesn't understand how people are so makpid not to mix fish and meat. Separate forks, separate plates. You know the drill. And yet these same people smoke and are overweight. But fish and meat, no fish and meat. Every other Tom, Dick, and Harry thing you're not supposed to eat, they eat. But no fish and meat, sakana. Bruce, whatever sakana, if it's not relevant today, it's not relevant. If it's a mitzvah, then even though the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah still applies. Okay, gentlemen. That was it on a broad perspective. I wish you all a very good day.
And we'll see you next week, Rabbi, for the last week of the season.
Seder Gamor.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.